Okay. Welcome, everyone. I'm so glad to be with all of you. We have some folks here in the theater and others who are joining us over live stream. If you are new to the West End community, my name is Carol Cavendillon. I'm the senior pastor here at West End United Methodist Church, and I'm dressed in my Vacation Bible School t-shirt because I started the day telling the Bible story to the children this morning. And so an exciting beginning to the day and now an exciting conclusion to the day as we are very thrilled to be welcoming Councilman Brandon Taylor into our building here, into our community. And he represents our church and where we are. We are in his district as well as other parts of the city around us. And we are really thrilled to have him with us so we can learn from Councilman Taylor about our community, about himself, about his family. His wife Demita is here with him, and I'm sure he'll introduce her in just a few minutes. But we're going to turn over the floor to Councilman Taylor and let him share with us about himself and about our community. So welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brandon Taylor. I have the distinct honor and pleasure to serve District 21 in the city of Nashville as a council member. Before we get into a lot of deep dive, and I'll tell you guys how I was tricked into becoming a council member. I think it was fate, because at one point, my lovely wife, you'll see her name is Demita. Demita is the love of my life. I love her to death. And I tricked her. We were at a meeting one day about trash with the trash folks, Public Works here in Nashville, and we wanted to learn how we could clean up trash and what we could do to better our community. And so we learned, and the folks came over and were like, "Where do you guys live?" "Oh, we live in North Nashville." "Oh, my goodness, we don't have a beautification commissioner in that area." And I said, "Oh, huh, we should get one, right?" And so Demita leaves, and she goes to the restroom. And I stopped and talked to the people at Public Works and say, "You know what? My wife would love to be the beautification commissioner." And she was just saying, right when you guys walked away, how much she thinks we need to change. And if there's nobody to do the job, she'll stand in the gap. And so, and now she's a beautification commissioner. And so, so thank you. And a few years later, we continued to do work in our community, specifically in our neighborhood. And we got down to the road, and I personally felt like the council member in the seat wasn't doing a great job. And I asked about 50 people to run against them. And all 50 of those people said, "You should do it." And I said, no. And so we got to one of our neighborhood meetings, and everyone was like, "You should do it." And even my wife turned on me to tell me to do it. And so that's, she got me back. And so now I ran for council, and it's been, I get a question a lot. "Do you like it? How do you like it? What is it that you like?" And I say, "Well, it's not one of those likable jobs. It's a job that you do and that you work hard at. If you have passion for your community, for your city, you can kind of like some pieces. But the most thing that I do like about being a council member is being able to work with individuals to see what they want in their communities and working every day to make sure that that happens. And that's what I get a chance to do as a council member in Nashville. So I'm Brandon. Nice to meet you all. A few different things other than me being a council member. Of course, we talked about Demita being the love of my life. Cinnamon comes close second. Cinnamon is our lovely dog. We're not sure. She's a mutt. We rescued her several years ago, and at first we were like, "What are we doing?" And now, if she left, I didn't know what we would do. I was born at Baptist Hospital. Family and friends mean the world to me. That's what keeps me sane and tamed. No matter how big I think I am, I have good friends and family to bring me way back down here, and to just be honest. University of Memphis graduate. I love all things Tiger. Somebody in this room has a Tennessee shirt on, and he probably should change. 15-year fundraising development professional. I've worked for organizations, the most recent organization that I've worked for here in Nashville was Nashville Rescue Mission, Meharry Medical College, and one more notable organization was St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, or ALSAC, the fundraising arm of St. Jude. And then I'm a huge Titans fan. I'm a Cowboys fan, but I'm slowly walking away from them. I was a Cowboys fan before the Titans made it to Tennessee, so I'm just too loyal. But I cheer for the Titans. Big White Sox fan. Ray Durham, if you guys followed any baseball, he is one of my favorite White Sox. He wore number 5 at the time I was a kid. He was the only black second baseman, and I played second base, and I wore number 5, so why not like the White Sox? I just became a very big fan of the Nashville Soccer Club. I have no idea what I'm watching when I'm there, but I cheer when they score a goal, and I get mad when the other team scores a goal. And I think that's pretty much, I'm back to the Preds, same thing there. I don't know what they're doing, but I just know that we should score a goal and the other team shouldn't. And then also a Memphis Grizzlies fan. So I want to talk a little bit today about what do you want to be when you grow up, right? And I ask that question seriously because it kind of goes into our theme of what you all have been talking about with 37208, the city of Nashville, the ever-changing landscape that we have. What do you want to be when you grow up? Does anybody remember or still thinking what they want to be when they grow up, and are they there, or is there something else that you're trying to reach to, right? And so when I think about this question, I ask it seriously. I'm going to ask you later. I'm going to ask you to think about it, and I'm going to ask you to reply with that answer. But first, let's listen to some folks tell us what they want to be when they grow up.
What do you want to be when you grow up?
I want to be...
Hey, I never think I thought of that.
Let me think about that. Whoa.
I want to be a teacher when I grow up.
Elementary teacher. I like little kids.
A babysitter.
A pastor. A
dolphin trainer.
A dental that eats bugs.
A haircutter.
A person who helps in charities.
I'm a cashier at Walmart.
An author. Chapter books about mythical creatures and animals and things.
I want to be a lawyer.
Lawyer.
Pilot.
Pilot.
Pilot?
And a dad?
A pilot racer dad?
Scientist.
Scientist.
Paleontologist.
Mine for dinosaur bones and studies them.
YouTuber.
Movie star.
A famous actor. Actor. Actor.
On stage,
on TV,
on Disney Channel,
or commercials.
I gotta be a model.
Model.
If I want a model, I'll just be a policeman.
Police.
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 Police officer.
I cop.
I want to do car chases.
Catch bad guys.
A superhero.
Batman.
Spider-Man.
I would like to go into the U.S. Army because my grandma, she loved the Army, but she never went into the service.
I want to be third African-American gymnast.
Gymnastic coach.
I want to be a professional dancer.
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 Dance teacher.
Ballerina.
Professional soccer player.
I have a shirt on right now that says Barcelona.
Soccer player.
Basketball player.
Basketball, football, or soccer player. Or baseball. I can never choose.
I do not know.
I'm still working on that.
Maybe when I grow up, I'll pick.
I already have a whole plan. Serve the Air Force for 20 years, become a businessman, make my own company for cars.
I want to be a Pokemon trainer.
I want to work at Target.
I want a cake.
I want to be a pop star.
Rock star.
Singer.
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 I want to be a cook.
A cook. But I don't really know how to actually cook.
I want to be an artist.
Artist.
Painter.
I want to be an artist that goes around painting walls.
An artist and a video game maker.
Video game designer.
Video game.
I want to be a filmmaker.
Whatever my dad is.
Do you know what your dad is?
I'm not sure.
I would be a doctor.
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 A mermaid.
A mermaid doctor.
Heart.
surgeon, neurosurgeon,
cardiologist,
gynecologist,
pediatrician, the kids doctor,
pediatrician.
And why do you want
to
do that?
I want to be a doctor and then I can wear rainbow sweatpants.
I really want to be a nurse. Everyone says you have to be very good at science and math. I'm not really, but I still want to be one.
I want to be a pet doctor because I like helping animals.
Pet vet.
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 Veterinarian.
Veterinarian.
Zoologist.
Princess fairy zookeeper.
How much do you think they get paid?
$29.
All right, so what do you want to be when you grow up? Has anybody thought about it? Any takers? I wanted to be, I'll tell you, I wanted to be a lawyer that played baseball for the White Sox and the Cubs. That was my dream, a lawyer that played baseball for the White Sox and the Cubs. I'm a big White Sox fan, I told you. There's a guy by the name of Jason Maxwell. He's the head baseball coach at Innsworth right now. He played for the Cubs. He taught me how to hit a curveball. And I can still hit a curveball to this day because of Jason. And so he played for the Cubs. So I said, oh, maybe I can do the Cubs too. And that was my dream. And I wanted to do something to help people. So I wanted to be a lawyer because I thought that could help people. And I can make a lot of money doing it, right? Or maybe, possibly. Then I wanted to be a baseball player because it's fun. I can play for the rest of my life. And so those are some of the things that I ask. And so when I think about what do you want to do when you grow up, right? I think every day we still are growing. Every single day. I learned something new today. I had a meeting about redistricting in the city of Nashville. I learned something new, right? There's always something that we're going to learn that's different or an area we can grow in. And so as I watched that video, I didn't hear anyone say they want to be a politician. And I promise you, I still never say I want to be a politician. It took me a long time to say, hey, I'm a politician. It took me a while. I would tell people, well, I'm not really like a politician, but I am. And when we look at what this means, right, so we can read, a person who is professionally involved in politics, especially as a holder of an elected office. This is the Oxford Dictionary definition of a politician. This is one definition of a politician. Would you all agree that this is what a politician is? I got some nods, yes. Some part of it, yes, Mr. Sales, thank you. I would agree, some parts of it, right? A politician, you're elected, that's what you do. So, and again, I never said I want to be a politician when I grew up, but it happened. This is the second one, right? A person who acts in a manipulative, devious way, typically to gain advancement within an organization. That's what we really think politicians are, right? If you really wanted to look at it, that's exactly where we think we are. And I tell you, I'm here to try to change that narrative. I truly ran for office because of trash in my neighborhood. And then some more stuff. But what engaged me into doing the work that I wanted to do was because I wanted the trash in my neighborhood to be picked up. I wanted people to stop dumping trash in my neighborhood. It's very simple. And I didn't know how to do it, how to fix it. I didn't know how to mitigate it. I still don't. And I got to the place where I thought would fix it. And I still don't know how to fix it. And so one thing I learned is that there's people in the world that make decisions on behalf of other people. And those are what politicians are. And a lot of times people say, well, what made you want to get into politics? Or what's next? And to be quite honest, I don't have a next. I just decided maybe in April 29th to be exact, that I was going to run for a second term. Because of some of the work that I continue to do, and we'll talk about that, finally happened. We finally could see it through. And so one of the things that I want to do is for the politicians, So manipulative and devious, right? When we think about the political landscape throughout the country, throughout the city, throughout wherever, we see this play out over and over and over again, is that when we get into politics, it's a dirty game. It's ugly. You get to see the belly of the beast. We do. And it is. But there's also some really good that could come out of being a politician. And so how do we change the narrative of what that is for us? How do we change the narrative in Nashville of what we need out of me and my colleagues? That's the question I have for you. And how can we do that? And one of the first things I think we can do is what you're doing today is engaging, having conversations with the people that are making decisions for you and your family, making sure that you hold them accountable and that you're listening and that they're listening. Those are some of the ways that we can change the narrative. So I'll tell you a little bit about my story of why I am. So I did a very brief stint in Minnesota. It was cold. My wife drove me to Minnesota. And we went there, and we stayed there for about 3 years. And we came home. Again, I said it was cold, and it was very far away from family. And we just couldn't understand what Minnesota nice really meant. And so we came back to Nashville, and I worked at March of Dimes. And one of the things that kind of changed my life being at March of Dimes was this campaign called I'm Born To. And so when we released this campaign and introduced it to the world, we had an all-staff meeting down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And we got these shirts with this phrase, I'm Born To. And at the end, it had a blank. I'm Born To blank. And there were white shirts with this color, with baseball sleeves, with purple baseball sleeves, the three quarters, you guys remember those? And so I took it, people were writing their name, they're right, I'm born to dance, I'm born to sing, I'm born to do this. And I couldn't fill mine out because I wanted to be very intentional about what I told people I was born to do. And so this was on the first day of the conference, of the all-staff meeting. And I went back to my room, I set it on a chair, and I looked at it every day. What am I born to do? And so the night before we're supposed to get ready, I'm ironing my shirt with the blank still, and I didn't know what I was born to do, so it hit me, and I wrote in my blank, serve. And so, again, I've been a fundraising guy, nonprofit guy for years, and I didn't do it for the money, trust me. I did it because I want to help people and I want to serve. And I think that that is what most people in the world want to do. They want to help their neighbors and they want to serve. They want to do what's right and they want to help other people get to a better space than they are. And so I wrote into that, I want to serve. And so as we move forward, I want to ask you guys, what is your why? Why do you engage with the city of Nashville? Why do you engage with the politicians? Why do you engage with your neighbors? Why do you want to do the things that you want to do? Why do you want to know more? Why do you want to learn more? Why do you want to help? And that is one of the main reasons that I'm here, is because I'm continuously trying to answer that question every single day of my life, is what is my why? I know that I want to serve, but how? And how can we get there? And how can we manage it? There's so many people that are doing extremely well. There's so many people that are hurting. One of the big reasons for me that I ran for office, I was telling the sales here, there were four areas, and I'll get to this here next, and so we can go to this. So we're going to talk about the city of Nashville. So let's talk about District 21 and Nashville. That's a beautiful picture, right? I don't think it tells the true story of what we're talking about. All right, that's better. All right, let's talk about Nashville. This is what we see, right? Let's talk about Nashville and District 21. So I'll tell you. So there's four guiding principles of why I ran for office. When I ran for office, I knocked about 1,000 doors before I set out to have a platform or vision of what my district should be. And so I remember the first day I knocked doors. I said, hey, I'm Brandon Taylor. I'm running for councilman in this district. And that's all I said. And so the person was like, well, what are you going to do? I don't know. I was like, to be quite honest, you're the first person I've told outside of my friends and family and people that already know that suckered me, like my wife and our other friends, into being a councilman. And I said, I don't know. What do you want to see? And so as I gathered that information, that's what I heard. And so some of the things that I'm working on now and the four areas that I heard, my four guiding principles, is one, are to secure infrastructure investments for District 21. For a long time, there's a whole plan. We just passed the budget, and I think we had an outstanding budget. I hope you guys agree. We worked really hard after a very tumultuous budget from a year before. And I think we were able to give to the people that we needed to, teachers, employees, et cetera, as well as secure funds for our future, right? So we're able to pay off some debt and then put some money away for rainy day fund, which I think is excellent. So one of the big things is securing investment in investment infrastructure or infrastructure investment. As we see Nashville look like this, right? One of the things I ask these people that put these long things up called cranes, I ask them, what are they going to do for the neighbors? Every single time they call. They call a lot. I got about three of calls on my way here. They call a lot, asking to rezone property, to do this, to do that, right? So how are we going to help the neighbors? Can you have X percent of affordable housing? Can you do this? Can you do that, right? And so those are some of the questions. But also, as we see these come up, that means our water pressure is going to slow down. That means that our waste management is going to change. All of those things that we're used to as a small city, they're going to change, and those investments are going to take more and more as we grow. I sat down today in that redistricting meeting, and 10 years ago, I had 17,000 people in my district. Today, I have 23,000 in one district, and that's preliminary records from the census. So we know that that's going to change. So we wanted to make sure that we have investments, specifically in our infrastructure. Wanted to decrease crime. 3728, we've talked about it nonstop. How do we decrease crime, but yet how do we increase transparency with police officers and with the community members? And those are some areas that I've worked on. Having conversations, every time we have a new commander, I introduce the commander to the area. We have a new commander here right now. His name is Tommy. Sorry, I only call him Tommy. Commander Tommy. Tommy Widener. He's in Midtown Hills, and Midtown Hills covers this area. And so building those relationships, getting to know the people to call when you need help. And then also increasing transparency. So with our police officers, making sure that we hold them accountable as well to getting to know their community that they work in and the people in that community and understanding the norms, right? When we think about North Nashville, there's some norms in North Nashville that are slightly different than other parts of the town. And so those norms aren't necessarily criminal, but they're different. And so helping them have that transparency. The number three thing was to mitigate illegal dumping. I told you I haven't figured it out yet, but I work on it every single day. Clean streets, clean alleys, clean neighborhoods, healthy alleys, healthy streets, healthy neighborhoods. It all flows together. And I have a heck of a beautification commissioner that's helping me with it, and hopefully she stays on board because her term is coming to a close soon. Fourth, smart and responsible growth and connecting communities. We see this picture quite too often, I think, sometimes. And so we have growth over and over and over again. You can drive down any street, specifically in the urban core of Nashville, and you'll see a crane, you'll see a cutout in the roadway, you'll see a metal plate over the cutout in the roadway. It's going to be something construction-wise. So how can we do that in a smart manner? How can we make sure that these people also pay their fair share as they come into our city to be our new neighbors? And so, not necessarily charging our new neighbors, but the folks that are inconveniencing us as we're moving about throughout the city. How can we work with them to invest back into the city? And then lastly, within that, is connecting our communities. There are communities that are vastly different from each other. I always tell people I have one of the most diverse districts in the city. I have people that live just right over here that may be paying $500,000, $500,000 for a condo. And they have other people that are paying $500 a month in rent. And some $105 a week, right? And so it's a very, very different communities that we serve. And as we see the growth and the change and the ever-changing landscape of Nashville, we have to figure out a way to connect those people in those communities and to help each person. So how do we help the person that just bought a brand new house that's beautiful next door to a small house and we're not sure if they're going to be able to afford the taxes? And so those are the things, those are the four areas that I'm working on. Some of the other areas that I've been working on as a council member that's been direct has been communication and information sharing. I wanted to make sure that I could communicate clearly, share information. So I send out a newsletter every council meeting. I tell you kind of what the hot topics are in Nashville that I think you might like to hear. And then I'll talk about the legislation, understanding all the whereases, right? If you've ever read a legislation, whereas this, whereas that, what is whereas? And so trying to break down 7 pages of whereases into 3 sentences to say, if this bill is passed, is what it does. So I try to do that. It's very hard. I try to do that. And then I also talk about what we're working on in the district and what the goals that we have. So where we were, where we are, and where we're going. And those are some of the areas that I spend a lot of time on is in communication. Secondly, other things, I am the Health, Hospitals, and Social Services Chair for the Metro Council. And in that area, a few things that we've been working on is fighting the Bordeaux Hospital. It closed, but we fought to try to keep that open. It was a long-term care facility in Bordeaux that just recently closed this year because the city is moving out of long-term health care. And so we had a subsidy set up for that we weren't going to give anymore. And those patients were moved out. There's also another property right down the street from that, Knowles Home. And we're still working to create that. Knowles Home is an assisted living space for disadvantaged individuals. And we're really working hard to keep the doors open there. Also with our social services portion of it, really working hard to represent individuals experiencing homelessness. As Nashville steadily grows, we continue to see individuals that are unhoused in our city. And that goes to a deeper conversation into affordable housing. And what does affordable mean? We can have 20 people in a room and we have 20 different definitions of affordable. So how can we have attainable housing for the people in Nashville as we continue to grow and move on? And lastly, some of the things that I've been working on is, of course, the 37208 committee. And in the 37208 committee, we've really been working hard to in two areas. One area is to prevent incarceration. So how do we prevent incarceration? And if you are familiar with the 37208 report, I always say that the media found one line out of 42 pages on 27, page 27, at the top of a graph with 30 other zip codes. Unfortunately, 37208 and 37207 were both on this chart. 37208 was number one, 37207 was number 29 or 27, I can't remember. And we stuck and we pulled that out and then we threw it to the media and said, 37208, where I live, where I raise my family, where I think I'm a good guy, is the highest incarcerated place in the country, 37208. But if we really dug into the report said, to be quite honest, the reason that we're first on this list is because we're last on so many other lists. We're last on affordable housing. We're last on education and matriculation through grade school and high school. We were last on the money pay scale. We have the highest poverty rate. We were first on the highest poverty rate in the city. Those numbers go on and on. And so what this report was asking, what is the correlation between poverty and incarceration? And the report told us that the correlation between poverty and incarceration is a great fit. You have people that don't have money, $14,000 annual income for the people that they surveyed that were in prison during this. 80% of those people, $14,000, think about that. And this was when they were kids, so they were growing up in the 80s. And then when they were adults in the mid to late 2000s, or early to mid 2000s, when they were kids, their families were making $14,000 or less annual salary. As adults, they were making $14,000 or less annual salary. So these are people that had to make decisions that some of us has never had to make and will never have to face, right? How am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? Do I keep the lights on or do I feed my kids? So those are some of the decisions that folks had to make. And how do I get the money to do it all? Well, that was a decision that had to be made as well. And so in 37208, what we're trying to do is balance out the incarceration and the poverty. Right? Can we take the poverty? Can we move it? Can we move the scales just a bit? And that's the work that we're trying to do. So we want to prevent incarceration through youth programs. One of the things that we just did, and this is more on the other side. So one is prevent. Two is support reparations and reentry as people are coming back into the world, right? And coming back into society. And so one of the things that I'm very, April 29th, that it was stated out loud, and then just this last council meeting, we were able to track it with the budget, is that we were able to reduce and eliminate some, but reduce many of the fines and fees in the criminal justice system. And that was exciting. And that was, again, I said, April 29th, I got to keep doing this work because it takes that long to do it. So I might as well continue to do it. And so April 29th is when I found that out, is that this would be introduced as a part of the budget. Not only do we have to fight, scratch, and claw to add the legislation, we didn't have to do that. It was introduced from a recommendation of our committee into the budget the mayor proposed. And so we were able to accomplish that, and there's many other things that we're looking to do. We're looking to have mentor programs for our youth. We're looking to have job readiness programs for individuals surfacing back into society from prison. We're also looking for job opportunities and job preparedness opportunities for individuals that are flying the coop, that are graduating high school, that are going to be going on to the next steps. And so as we help these individuals prepare, we provide those opportunities in North Nashville, in 37208, in the city of Nashville, with affordable housing, or rather attainable housing, with a transportation system that can get them to and from housing and work. And as well, before they can get work, we have to have jobs that everyone can work. We had a great deal with Oracle coming in, and they're bringing all of these high dollar jobs. And so I did ask a question, how can the people that are in poverty in 37208 that we talk about being incarcerated, how can they get that job? And what jobs will flow, and how can this group help us create those new jobs? And that's what we're working to do. So with the 37208 committee, it's the longest thing that I've ever done was try to reduce criminal justice fines and fees, and we did it. So now we're on to our second goal, is creating a 37208 fund for small nonprofits, where $5,000, $10,000, $25,000 gift would be transformational for those organizations that are doing the work, that are helping people get their voting registration back alive, that are helping people get their driver's license reinstated, that are helping people do things that they don't have the funds to help them do. And so if it's dollars, if it's pro bono work for legal aid, marketing, development work, those are the type of things that we're doing with this 37208 fund. We're this close to getting it off the ground, and once we do, I'll definitely let you all know. And so those are just some of the things that I wanted to talk about. I know that there were some questions that you guys had, and wanted to answer any questions for you or whatnot. So I guess the floor is yours. Right. So the boundaries of the district are everything north of West End. So if we drive down West End, we get on 440. So everything east of 440, except a little space right on the other side of 440 in Sylvan Heights, right off of Charlotte. So it's up on the hill when you're coming around 440 into 40. And then if you kind of hang on around that area, everything there to about on the interstate, everything north of the interstate, 40 to about where the railroad tracks, the lumber yard. Are you guys familiar with Oakley Lumber Yard? It's in the industrial part of town, right at 40, I-40 and Charlotte in that area. So it's a you go over the railroad tracks on Charlotte, so everything on the other side of 40. Follow those railroad tracks into the Nations, and then all the way down to where the railroad tracks meet the river, then follow the river, and everything east of the river, and then everything south of Bordeaux. And then on the back side is everything on this side of the interstate. So basically to downtown at 15th, 16th, where Lake Palmer used to, where that hole in the ground, now we have a building there. So everything there, inside of there, and all the way back to North Nashville.
We have a question in the chat from Krista Blackshear. And she asks, what would you say was the hardest barrier or struggle to running for city council?
It's a great question. So when I ran for council, no one had a clue who I was. My neighbors that lived in my immediate neighborhood, but not many other people. It was probably one of the hardest things is name recognition. I ran against a legend, a living legend here in Nashville, and they had great name recognition. People knew them. And so trying to build my name recognition was probably one of the hardest things. And it took a lot of work. I didn't raise a lot of money, but I did know I could walk to door to door for people on the list that vote. So I took a listed vote, and whoever votes, I knocked on their door. If you voted all the time, every time, if you voted every time the polls were open, I knocked on your door four times. And if you voted only for presidential races, I maybe knocked on your door once and maybe called you once. But the big thing was just meeting people and taking the time to do that. You still have a job, you still have a family, you still want to be a regular kid, right? Like Pinocchio, I just want to be a normal kid, and so a real boy. And so you want those things, and so you kind of try to balance. So finding the time and balancing all those things were the hardest. Mr. Sales, you had a question.
One second, sorry. I need you to speak into the mic because the people on the live stream can't hear the questions.
Where are you? One of the problems over in your district, and I wonder how you see it and what can be done, is the tornado and predator fires.
Yeah.
Have swooped in, and many of the houses over there are rentals, yep. And some of the houses that have even been owned by people that have been severely damaged, I can understand why somebody offers them a check.
Yep.
They can walk free without having to repair or do work. And the problem is, as you know, the people who have lived there for a long time, they don't have any other place to go. And it's a real crisis, it seems to me, because we don't have public housing.
Yep.
We don't have the kind of affordable housing. So how do you see that issue?
Yeah, so that was a crisis immediately to be quite honest, day number two, right? March 3rd, March 4th, right? March 4th, we had people knocking on doors saying, hey, you never built this again. I don't think you can afford it. Your insurance probably won't be able to cut your check big enough to get started back. You should just sell it to me. And it happened. And so one of the things I did immediately, and I made it known, and I continue to make it known, is that any of the property that was damaged in the tornado where people lived, insurance. So when we think about insurance, we want to indemnify you. We want to bring you back to where you were, right? Nothing more, nothing less, where you were. And so part of that conversation for me is I want to indemnify my community. I want to bring it back to where it was. Nothing more, nothing less, exactly where it was. If we get a little bit more, that's great. Only for the people that were once there. And so one of the things I did immediately was to make it loud and clear that I'm not going to rezone any property upzone. So I'm not going to let you put two houses on one lot where a house was damaged in tornado because we want those people to come back. And so if you know this, you may not buy the property, or you just may try to fix it back as a landlord. And in some cases, I'll be quite honest, a slumlord, to say, you know what, let me just build this back and have renters in the community come back. And so that was one of the areas that I was able to work on. Another area is we worked closely with FEMA, and a lot of people didn't understand the process with FEMA. And so working to gather information with FEMA was important for me and helping people file. And typically when you file with FEMA, you don't get it the first time, and you probably won't get it the second time. So you have to keep going back and forth, and then they will help you then. And that's just kind of their process, and I didn't know that. I learned it the hard way by asking very stern questions to the FEMA people of why these people keep getting turned away. And so so working with individuals to help them understand the process with FEMA, and then advocating for FEMA, because we then went right into a pandemic, a COVID pandemic. And so then advocating for FEMA to stay open longer through the process, because they were supposed to close 3 months after the storm. And so we asked them to stay open an additional 3 months, and they were graciously able to do so. Those are some of the ways that we're able to, and now, as we get back, providing Council Member Syracuse and I, and we introduced a bill that fast-tracked the individuals that had any damage. We fast-tracked them to the front of the line at Codes and to get their permits. We waived their permit fees, and then we saw, and then what we also, then we had to amend that legislation because we saw predatory individuals using the fast track and using the fee waiver that it bought the property after the tornado. And so you then had to, we amended that legislation to require you to show proof of ownership prior to March 3rd. And so those were some of the ways that we were trying to help people. One, to help them quickly, because being out of a home, your insurance runs up if you don't have. A lot of people are underinsured, and so working through that. And then also getting them the help from FEMA. And then we had very, very strong organizations on the ground, from the Equity Alliance to Gideon's Army to a few other organizations that were on the ground helping people with their rental assistance, if they needed rent, if they needed a place to stay until they figured it out. In a hotel or wherever that may be. So making sure that we could get those individuals to the help. We had the tornado recovery, so there were a ton of organizations and a few organizations. The Magruder Center was one as well. But there were a few organizations that were right on the ground in the North Nashville community that could help with that.
Before this event, we asked folks if they had any questions for you to go ahead and send them in, and we had a couple of questions there. One of them is, how can we advocate for affordable housing?
One, if you have property, build something affordable on it if you don't know what you want to do with it, right? And what is affordable? Can you meet your needs financially for you to build? That's the feasibility process. Or if you just want to help, you can donate it to us, and we'll find a good way to do it with the Barnes Fund. People can give to the Barnes Fund. You can advocate for the Barnes Fund. We just finished our budget, but this is the time that we need to start to think about what the next budget looks like.
Sorry to interrupt, but yes. Can you talk a little bit more about the Barnes Fund in particular? I think a lot of folks don't know who it was named for, and a Methodist minister, and what it does and why it exists.
All right, so the Barnes Fund, we can put dollars into the Barnes Fund from the city. We can then leverage those dollars from the city to nonprofit builders that build affordable housing. And what that means is they build housing at a certain rate financially, and they can't sell or rent the housing over that rate. And only people that make a certain amount of income can buy or lease into those apartments. And so with this Barnes Fund, we're able to award these nonprofit builders with the Barnes funding to then be able for them to leverage those dollars that we give them to build affordable housing. Now, they're able to then leverage those funds with TIF dollars or state dollars, dollars that come from the state that only allow you to do certain things financially with affordable housing. You can get federal funds as well to do affordable housing. So helping those nonprofit builders that only do affordable housing, no for-profit housing, but only affordable housing. So we can give money to the Barnes Fund into the budget, and then from there we can take those dollars and place them in the hands of the people that are building those funds. There's a new bill now to help some of the smaller nonprofit organizations, so minority organizations and so women ran and people of color running organizations. So we have legislation there to help some of those organizations that have property or other areas that they're trying to build to allow for some of these affordable housing units. We have that legislation that's going through right now. Councilmember Swara is she's the affordable housing chair, and she's the affordable housing, and she's the sponsor of this bill. And so working with organizations throughout the city that generally build affordable housing and affordable housing only for individuals that the average median income, AMI, so you'll hear us talk about AMI often. And so we'll talk about 30% AMI, 80% AMI, 0 to 30. So you hear people talk about 0 to 30% AMI. So those are people that are making anywhere from 0 to 30% of the average median income. And then people that make 31 to 60% AMI are in a different category. And the people that make 60 to 80 are in a different category. And if you make above 80% AMI, you can't get in. So anything in that 60 to 80 is what we call workforce housing. So generally, teachers, firefighters, police officers, those type of salaries are at that 60 to 80% AMI. And so these are people that live in our city or that work in our city but can't afford to live and stay in the communities they work in. So we talk about transparency with policing, right? It's almost impossible for a police officer out of the academy right now to be able to afford housing in the community that they live in if they serve the urban core. So if you're in East Nashville, North Nashville, Sylvan Park, the Belmont area, those individuals, Edge Hill, those individuals don't make enough money to, based on the pricing of the houses, don't make enough money to stay there. So anyone below 80% AMI are approved for either affordable housing or workforce housing. Affordable housing is the lower range, 0 to 30%, and then workforce housing is everything above that.
This question follows that. This question is from Kay Gray, and she asked, where can one find zoning restrictions or prohibitions? For example, if West End wanted to build two tiny houses on our property, Okay, Kay. Or we wanted to compost in a big way. I like where her head's at here. Or promote issues that may be considered, quote, political.
Reverend Carol would be the first step if it's political. I would say, so let me back up. So you guys have a huge, beautiful parking lot that could have parking garage on it that could do so much more than what it's doing today in regards to, I think, in regards to providing housing, yes. Right? I will say that. I think it's an opportunity. It's right in the city center where jobs are, where people need to get to. We know we have a long time before we figure out our transportation needs, a long time. But providing housing, back to if you have land, you can provide housing. And so where you can find that information, you can hang out with me, mm-hmm. and I can talk to you about it. Mm-hmm. Or you could go to planning and get a better understanding from them of what the possibilities are, what they feel that would be feasible, et cetera, if you want to do tiny houses, et cetera. And then I would say, communicate to your neighbors, to your parishioners, and everyone else that would have a stake in what you would try to do here. But.
Thank you. This question comes from literal chat on a cell phone from Jan Morrison. She says, can you talk more about your ideas on getting jobs for folks who live in 37208, like at Oracle?
Yeah, so one is if we go back to that prevention, incarceration prevention, youth mentors, youth programs, how do we prepare our youth that are in our middle schools now in North Nashville to be prepared for jobs into the future? Some of the conversations with Oracle started at Fisk and Tennessee State, of course, Belmont and Vanderbilt and all the other schools, but Fisk, Tennessee State, and even some of those other schools, right? So how can we, this is a conversation that we need to have a little bit more detail with Oracle, is how, because we're not finished with that, right? So we have a lot more legislation and conversation that has to be passed before that's completed. And so how can we have those conversations with Oracle to help increase a fast-track program or some type of program within our schools with our middle schoolers that are here right now? And so they're coming in, they're going to help financially with our STEAM programs, right? Our STEAM programs throughout the city. So how can we specifically pinpoint opportunities for the youth in 37208, 37209, 37218, which is in that North Nashville bubble, Bordeaux, right across the river, 37209 is Preston Taylor Homes in that area. And so how can we work with an Oracle or a Facebook or whoever may come to town to prepare kids to move through a matriculation program all the way through college or through high school into college and then into internships at Oracle? And then from internships into a full-time job. I think that's a conversation we've had. I've had this conversation with Mayor Cooper to see if we can move this topic a bit further. And those are keys to one, when we bring X amount of jobs to Nashville, that X amount of jobs are for Nashvillians. And we say that we need X amount of jobs for Nashvillians. And then we prepare X amount of Nashvillians for those jobs. So that's the key, I think, to helping people get into the jobs at Oracle.
I have another question on here, but I want to make sure that those folks who actually came out get an opportunity. Do any of you have any questions you'd like to ask?
I'd like to bring up another issue.
Okay. I'm going to give you the mic, Ray.
This has something to do with the housing. A lot of people in Nashville don't understand that the state government has an authority over this city and has, there's a whole bunch of people from Williamson County who like to run the city by passing against things that Nashville wants. I've worked on a couple of projects. One, we had a plan that a builder, if he set aside so many public, so many affordable units, there would be some givebacks and some help for that person. Well, guess who stopped it?
State.
The state. They interfere all the time, and they draw off the money from our city and the province. They like our entertainment. They like our women. They like our whiskey, but they don't like the city.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things most people in this city do not know that or understand that. I don't know what the answer for that is, but I know you're up against it.
So impact fees are part of what he's – impact fees are one area. I will. And inclusionary zoning is part of it as well. So impact fees, if you are a builder, you have inconvenience, a financial impact on the lives of the people that you're building around. If you think about East Nashville, what it used to look like, right? So for every house that has two houses on it, when the trash truck comes, that's two families of trash. So that trash truck gets filled up halfway through the block, as opposed to two blocks down, right? So that's an impact in the city. We have to pay for that trash truck to go back to the dump, dump the trash, load back up, and come back up and finish their route. If you live in the city, you've probably missed your trash on your trash day, and you went out to wheel it back in, and it was still full. It was because of things like that. It's because we can't put the burden on the taxpayer every time we need to find more dollars. And so these impact fees that happen in every county around us, except Davidson, because we're preempted by the state, these impact fees are created to be able to say, if you're building X amount of units for X amount of people, your impact fee will be this amount. If you're building a single family unit, your impact fee will be this amount. So charging an impact fee that then goes back into the general fund that we can spend on some of those services, hiring more firefighters, paying our teachers, the things that we try to do with our general funds that we receive through property taxes, commercial property taxes, etc. Right? So adding those impact fees would be extremely helpful. And the city has tried to do that more than once, more than twice, and it's been preempted by the state. Inclusionary zoning is very similar to what Mr. Sales was talking about. And inclusionary zoning then gives, if you say, all right, I have a multi-unit building. Financially, I need to put this many units in it to cover the cost, pay my people, to pay myself to do these things, right? But if I can help the city out with adding more affordable housing stock, so I have 100 units, 20% of this building are going to be affordable housing at 0% to whatever AMI, then from that point, there is either a subsidy or a tax incentive that you can receive with that zoning. And that's where, again, we get preempted by the state, and other counties in the state have passed that law, or other cities or municipalities have passed some of those laws to help with their affordable housing or to help with their impact fees. And so the way that we can help with that is it's an uphill battle, but it's just to continue to advocate, be an advocate for those changes on the state level. There's a lot of things that happen on a local municipality level that is preempted by the state. I personally had legislation that a lot of people hated. It didn't pass. But it was to provide a notice to tenants from the landlord or the property owner if they wanted to sell the property that the tenant lived in, and provide that notice 30 days before listing. Property owners, folks that lobby for property owners, apartment complex, et cetera, did not like it because real estate agents, et cetera, because they want to turn over fast. But when we and then we have what's called the URLTA, the Uniform Resident Landlord Tenant Act, which said, oh, we're gonna if people are following the URLTA, we're okay, because if you have a lease, you go by what the lease says. If you're on a month-to-month lease, you got 30 days to get out. And so, and I always ask people, you got 30 days to get out, go. Right, what would you do? I have no idea what I would do. I just told my wife last night that if we had to move, I don't know. We'd just sell the whole house, everything in it. We'd just have it all. Because it's just so much work, right? And so think about moving everything in your home, your kids in new schools, the things that you have to do. And so we were trying to work that out. And then there was a second piece is where rates were increasing. So when, again, I talked about a tumultuous budget a year ago. When property taxes went up, people raised their rental rates. Anywhere from 100% to 300% for the folks that are leasing, tenants that are leasing. And if you can't pay that, you have to go somewhere. So we passed legislation that would require you to give a notice to the tenant that the rate in 90 days that the rate will increase. And so now there's talks, it's not been filed, but there's been talks of legislation to be filed that all municipalities that follow under the URLTA, the Uniform Residential Landlord Tenant Act, cannot file legislation that goes against the URLTA, which we follow the URLTA as a county, but that means that you have 30 days to get out. That's the law. Or if you're in a week-to-week rental or less rental, you have 10 days to get out. So.
I have another question in the chat from Krista Blackshear. She said, having never been in politics before, what resources did you resort to for assistance or better understand the needs of the community?
The people in the community. I work for the people that elected me. No more, no less. If you aren't a constituent in my community and you have other needs in the community, I lead with them. I follow the leadership of the people that elected me.
She has another question. How can HBCUs like TSU and Fisk help with educating individuals and getting jobs that pay a living wage?
So, one, with Tennessee State and Fisk, I think that their role in the city of Nashville is to train the people at Tennessee State and Fisk to be the best that they can when they're ready to hit the job market. And so if they can help us train the individuals that are in those schools that are ready to go immediately after they graduate, and that's the best thing they can do. They do a great job of that. Then also they have very strong partnerships already currently. So increasing those partnerships with organizations that can provide internships, jobs that are then become, they say, okay, this is our organization and we're gonna look at Tennessee State and Fisk as a preferred school that we recruit from. So working in that area.
Are there any other questions from people in the room? I'll put out another request if you are on live stream or Facebook. If you've got any other questions, now's the time. So in my position, I'm the pastor of missions and outreach. And one of the things that our committee is trying to figure out is what is the best way that West End can be a neighbor? What's the best neighborly thing we could do as a church? I've heard you talk about affordable housing. I've heard you talk about advocacy. In your opinion, what's the best thing? Knowing what you know, you don't know a whole lot, but we've been with us. Councilman Taylor came over and took a tour and hung out in Pastor Carroll's the knave to Carol's office for a little while. So knowing what you know about us, what would you think is the best thing that we could do to be a good neighbor?
So one is engagement. And I think you guys are a Noah church, right? And so engaging, I think Noah does extremely well with understanding advocacy and then kind of breaking down what those priorities are within Noah. And then they do an outstanding job. That's how I know to say. I never met these folks, but they email us all the time about their thoughts and whatnot, and they align with Noah. And so one is continuing the work that you do with Noah. I think that that is a great organization. It's a powerful organization with faith leaders throughout the entire city. That's one way. The second thing is events like this. And engaging with the local leaders in town to see what they're thinking, to hear what the priorities are that they're working on. And then lastly, for a District 21 wide neighbor, is as we continue to communicate and have meetings and we get back together again, is to join some of those events, come out to those neighborhoods. I'm working now on a series for the 3728 committee. In regards to alternatives to policing. And so what does that mean? What are alternatives to policing? Are there any alternatives to policing? Enhancing community policing and community police relationships and those different types of things. And so having voices from our neighbors to come and help us as we walk through those conversations and understand those conversations are important. And then lastly, I'm working to host a community meeting. So I do a town hall meeting. And so my first back in person town hall meeting, I'm working with West End to host that meeting here. So we'll have people throughout the entire district. So coming to that meeting and just meeting the people that are here, hearing what they have to say, hearing some of their thoughts, their priorities. Because a lot of times we can think what we think we know what people are thinking or needing or wanting, but hearing it directly from the individuals are extremely helpful.
Okay, Phyllis.
I'm just wanting to thank you and the council. Is it on?
Okay.
For including in the budget money for Metro schools to do social-emotional learning. Mm-hmm. As you know, there is such a disparity of children of color who are suspended and receive negative discipline in the schools, and that NOAA, and of course we're members of NOAA, have been working for years to get programs within the school to keep kids from being suspended.
Yes.
And for the first time, we are getting money from the budget. The school budget has always included mm-hmm. Money for social-emotional learning and restorative practices. But this year's budget has included, I think, $3.5 million
yes.
to enhance those programs in the school. That's not exactly what we asked for, but it's better than what we've ever had. So I know that a lot of the council persons have met with folks from NOAA and have agreed that this is so important to
yes.
keep our kids in school and to cut down on the school to prison pipeline. So I want to thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And yes, the social emotional learning aspect is it was grand. I mean, it was one of the I think we had a great budget, and it was one of the cherries on top for the budget. Restorative practices, trauma-informed learning as well. Those are other two areas that we have to kind of beef up in retrospect to what we've done this year. And so the advocacy that I think NOAA had was very helpful. And the educational committee that's together, I've had conversations with them on NOAA and making sure that you guys continue to advocate for that, helping us have a voice. As I mentioned earlier, people ask me how do I do this? Well, I listen to people, and then I make my decision from there. And so having that voice helps us kind of move the whole thing forward, right? We look at the picture of all these cranes and the saying, a rising tide raises all ships. And so that's one of the things we have to do in Nashville is we have to raise all ships no matter what part, what quadrant they're from. We have to figure out a way to put everyone on a trajectory that's going to be that's going to help them succeed in life. And so that's one. It's very small. I know that the school board is working now to see what are the next steps that we need, because we're going to continue to need to add to several other things and wraparound programs outside of what we do at the schools, putting dollars in our library system, in our park system, and preparing our kids to have opportunities from, because we right now there's a huge conversation in regards throughout the state of Tennessee for COVID learning loss and then out-of-school learning loss. So anytime that students are spending out of school and not learning, even if it's from Monday night to Tuesday morning, how do we recoup that loss? And so so creating those wraparound programs to having parks partner with the library or partner with or the library partner with NASA or other organizations, Pencil, et cetera, to help create more opportunities and avenues for our students.
Yeah, just to one other issue that you've been talking about, how the state legislature sort of goes against what we want in Nashville. The Better Education Plan, which is how the state funds school districts, is very, very unfair to practically all the school districts. Their formula is just not where it needs to be, and I think there are efforts from legislatures in the state to change the formula so that there'll be more funding available to the big cities as well as to some of the rural areas.
Right.
And we're trying to keep tabs of that because that's a very important issue that comes from the state.
Yeah. It's So this and as you can hear, local legislation is driven by a lot driven by what the states do, what you can allow, what they can't allow, the budgeting wise for the schools. No matter the need, every school has the same amount of dollar that goes to each kid. And so some schools, and there's some schools that we, I like to call them pseudo private schools, because you, if you can't afford to live in the zip code or in the school district, in that zone district, you can't go there. And some of those schools are doing extremely well because of their PTOs. There's some schools in Nashville that don't have a PTO. Their parents can't afford to raise money to have every student to have an iPad or a laptop or some of those extra learning things. And so those are the state. The state is where the dollars can come from. And a lot of that comes off of the sales taxes in big cities like Nashville and Memphis that are sometimes preempted by some of the decisions that we make throughout the state. So.
Okay, well, I think we have asked all the questions that have been posed. Is there anything else from you, Councilman, or anybody else?
So one last thing, what are you going to do today to make a difference, is the question I have for you. What do you want to be when you grow up? We still got time. And since we're in the church, we can preach a little bit, right? So we still got time to grow up. And so what do you want to be when you grow up? What's that lasting memory that you want to have? And so thank you guys for today. And so hopefully today we're not, when we think about politician, you don't think about manipulative or devious. You think about service and people that want to help people. So thank you.
We are so grateful for your time and grateful that you are our representative here, and we want to be good partners and good neighbors with you and with everyone in our district. So I've learned a lot, and I feel like a lot of us have learned more about our community. And we had a wonderful sermon from a guest preacher on Sunday, and his last sentence was go and do. So I see that word do And that's our invitation. So I would like to close us in prayer, if that's all right, and send us out into the night. Let's pray. Gracious God, centuries ago, your prophet spoke your word to your people and said, seek the welfare of the city in which I have placed you. And you have placed West End United Methodist Church in the middle of a wonderful city that's growing and changing and struggling in many ways to be a place that is equitable for all, to be a place where every person can thrive. So we give you thanks for the opportunity to learn more about our community. We give you thanks for the hard work that Councilman Taylor and the Metro Council and all of our leaders do. Give us your wisdom to know how we as your people in this place can go and do and make our community a safer, more loving place for all people. And now we ask that you would send us forward into this night that we might rest well from a long day and wake up again ready to serve you and our neighbor in all that we do. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Go in peace.